It's a pleasure to invite back to our aquarium Barry Sanders. He was here a couple of years ago when he talked about his book, American Avatar, The United States and the Global Imagination, which I think is a very thought-provoking book. And with his new book that he's going to talk about tonight, we wanted to be sure that we had him back. It's called The Los Angeles 1984 Olympic Games. And first, let me acknowledge our lecture sponsor, Gazette Newspapers. And Barry is a local guy in Los Angeles. He's an international lawyer, and he's chairman of the Southern California Committee for the Olympic Games. As chairman, he led the effort for the bid to get the 2016 Olympic Games to Los Angeles. Where are they going to go?
2016 is in Rio.
In Rio. And
but Chicago, it came down to us in Chicago as the American city. They're the ones that got the chance to give it a try.
Getting an Olympic, designated as an Olympic city is quite an amazing challenge, because the way it is now, each country can only nominate one city, and there's a lot of politics that goes on. But Barry was very involved in getting the 1984 Olympic Games here to Los Angeles, and it included a number of the events in Long Beach. And in many ways, that was the Olympics that set the tone for doing them in the future, because in many cities, they had cost an awful lot of money, and there was resentment after the Olympics, and they ended up with these huge facilities, often that were never used. And Barry was telling me earlier tonight that that beautiful stadium in Beijing, the Bird's Nest, it has been used for one event since the Olympics, and it's now being proposed that it would be torn down and turned into either housing or a shopping center or something. So the strategy here was and will be in the future to take advantage of the wonderful facilities that we have, including some in Long Beach. Barry is also the president of the Board of Commissioners of the Recreation and Parks Department of the City of Los Angeles. So that means that in that purview, he has an aquarium under his control, the Cabrillo Aquarium across the bridge. He's chairman of the Los Angeles Parks Foundation, and he's a member of the Board of Commissioners of Los Angeles. He's for a long time, he has been a very avid supporter of amateur sports in Southern California. And he has represented not only the Olympics, as I mentioned, but America's Cup Organizing Committee, the LA 84 Foundation. He's chairman of the board, or he served on the board of the Special Olympics of California. He's now on the board of the Special Olympics 2015 World Games, and he's the director of the Los Angeles Sports Council and the Los Angeles Sports Council Foundation. So sports is a big part of his life, and sports for all of us. He was awarded the Civic Medal of Honor by the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce in 2011, and he's been a really good friend of the aquarium. He helped us develop the concept for our trout exhibit. It's going to go right out there. When you leave, Barry, you'll see it's all torn up. So if it doesn't work, it's all your fault.
I never catch
anyone. So please join me in welcoming Barry Sanders back. And these will be for sale afterwards.
Thank you. Oh, there I was years ago. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Jerry, thank you so much. It is both a pleasure and an enormous honor to be at the aquarium, and to be at the aquarium once again. Not only did I have the great pleasure of talking about American Avatar, this book, a couple of years ago, but also I was privileged to be on a panel to discuss the ocean offshore Southern California about a year ago, and now it's great to be back at what is truly one of the most wonderful institutions in Southern California. And on top of that, not only is it wonderful if it were anywhere, but it's wonderful because it's here in Long Beach, which has been a big part of our Olympic history, both in 1932 and 1984, and our plans for 2024. Be there or be square. And it's going to happen, I believe. Let me ask, how many of you were at the 1984 Olympics? Well, I got quite a few. Believe it or not, you're a diminishing species. When they asked me about a year ago, it was just about a year ago, the people who published these histories, and they do a lot of histories of different parts of the United States, different cities, let me come out in front. And there's sort of a series, and a lot of them are fairly casual. They asked me to do a book on the 1932 and the 1984 Olympic Games. And I said, I'll just do the 1984 Games now. If that works out, we'll move to 1932. Also, it turns out that through my friends at the LA 84 Foundation, I was able to get the rights to reissue all these photographs, to reproduce these photographs. 1932, even though it was all those years before, is harder to get the rights for complicated reasons. But in 3 or 4 years, we could do that too if people want to. The response I gave to them was that I thought it was a good idea to do a book on the 1984 Olympics at this time. And one of the reasons is the one I said. There are fewer and fewer people who were around then. It's not just because everybody gets a year older each year, but it's because think of all the people who move in. I mean, it's been from 84 to 2014, you know, it's 30 years. So anybody who is younger than 30 years, I guarantee you, wasn't there. And most of our population is younger than 30 years old. And then all the folks who've moved in and all the folks who've moved out. So give it to 2024 when we're next going to have the games here. 40 years, you'll be over 90% of the people weren't the same people who were here. When people say you're going to have it again, well, I say actually it's a totally new population in what is a totally new city. So it was good to do it for that reason. The other reason is if you bang around the Olympic movement, as I do, and you know the International Olympic Committee in Switzerland, you realize that their own history of the Olympics sort of starts in 1992 in Barcelona. They don't have much recollection of this. They should. Some of the leaders in the movement were stars in those games. Seb Coe of England, who is now the head of the British Olympic Association, he won the gold medal here in middle distance running. Nawal El Moukawatl, wonderful woman from Morocco. She was the first Islamic woman to win an Olympic medal, the first Moroccan to win an Olympic medal. And that was here. And she's like number two in the leadership now of the IOC and a terrific person. So there's reasons for them to remember it. But if you look, you go to their museum. They recently reopened their museum. The focus begins in 92. So it was a good time to come out with a book that is easily obtainable, can be bought at a bookstore, that tells the story of what happened here, because what happened here reinvented, reshaped, and in many ways rescued the Olympic movement, and also reshaped this community, the Los Angeles area. There were histories. In fact, the Olympic Charter requires that after an Olympic Games, you have to create an official history. Well, we did. A two-volume thing that's this big and weighs about 70 pounds, not available then or now at bookstores. It's in the library of the L84 Foundation. It might be in LA's Central Library. I doubt it. It's in the library of the International Olympic Committee. It's not really available. And in the following year, there was about a 500-page reduced paperback version, but it was never in bookstores. And also in around 1985, there were a few coffee table books put out of photographs of people doing this or that. But other than that, if you were to go to a bookstore or even a library and seek a history of the 84 Games, you could not find one. So this seemed to have a purpose. What it records is an Olympic Games that, as I say, may have rescued the Olympic movement, because we were awarded the Olympic Games in 1978 initially, 2 years after the debacle of the Montreal Olympic Games. They lost what were then unheard of amounts of money, several billion dollars. They didn't ever finish paying it off until about 30 years later, just a few years ago, because they took out some 30-year bonds to pay it off. The mayor went to jail. And when it came time to decide who was going to have the 1984 Olympics, which would be in 1978, they would decide that. Now it's 7 years in advance. Then it was six. We were the only bidder.
The only other prospective bidder had been Tehran, and they had this, what in the South they called the late unpleasantness. In their case, it was the revolution, and they withdrew. And the situation was that here was Los Angeles. We'd bid many times. I come to this as the chairman of the Southern California Committee for the Olympic Games. We were founded in 1939, and our dual purpose is to support the Olympic movement and to bid for the Games whenever there's a chance. And we bid over and over and over. And we finally got them then in 84. The man whose photograph was briefly there, John Argue, was the man in the shoes I'm in now as the chairman. And it was our purpose to bid for the Games. All those times before we had bid, we had been unsuccessful. The way you win bidding for the Olympic Games is by losing. And by losing with a certain amount of good sportsmanship. Because if you look at Olympic competition, the various races, the competitions, and all that, the most exciting, interesting, difficult, complex competition of all is the competition to host the Games. This is the ultimate Olympic event. And it typically, you don't give any awards in the Olympics to a bad sport. So should you seek the Games, lose, and then take your red wagon and go home, you will never win. You do it by trying and trying and trying again. So we would bid each year. Then comes 1956, and they decided each country can have only one city, which is what Jerry said. So the US, we kept bidding to the US Olympic Committee to be that city, and they kept nominating Detroit. Detroit because the president, Doug Robey, of the US Olympic Committee was a Detroiter. And Detroit kept losing. Perhaps gracefully, but losing. Till finally, for the 1976 Games, we were the nominee, and they chose Montreal. For 1980, Mayor Yorty in San Francisco led an effort, and we swung and missed again, and they chose Moscow. So we come up to 1984, and finally, we're the only city. Nobody else wants it. But what we were proposing is what we had always proposed and what had worked so well in 1932. An Olympic Games put on, financed, arranged by a private nonprofit corporation, not by the government. And the International Olympic Committee is people from all around the world who are used to the fact that big things get done only by governments, who incidentally, they expect to guarantee the finances of it. So if the thing runs a deficit, the government picks it up. The IOC is never in danger of a deficit. So those are the rules. The rules of the Olympic Charter require that any deficit be guaranteed by the city or the federal government. And the expectation was a governmental effort, so that if the government in China wants you to use the stadium, it's fine, it's their stadium, they just say, go use it. We were tentatively selected in 78 because we weren't meeting this model. And we then spent a year, and I say we, I wasn't involved at that point. I became involved in 79. We then spent a year, meaning Mayor Bradley and John Argue and a team of people, negotiating with the IOC to get them over the hump of the fact that we didn't fit the model. They didn't trust private sector, wasn't in their usual pattern, and they demanded the guarantee. The people of Los Angeles actually adopted a no Olympic tax initiative to assure that not a penny of tax money would go to this project. So these two collided until finally there was a compromise worked out where the US Olympic Committee gave their guarantee against deficit. And with that face-saving compromise, the deal was entered in early 79. It was face-saving because everyone knew that the US Olympic Committee didn't have two nickels to rub together, but they offered the guarantee. We then organized it. Peter Ueberroth was hired at that point. He hadn't been involved until then. And we went forward in a new model of financing and putting on the games. And the big new model was that other than three small venues, as they call them, the word for stadiums or arenas, we had all the facilities. It was realized by our people who were bidding that the Olympic Games actually would run a surplus time and again, if only they weren't spending enormous sums to build buildings. So the only two times the Olympics ever have made money, have had a surplus of funds, were the time in 1932 in LA, when there was $1 million surplus at the bottom of the Depression, and 1984, where we had a $232 million surplus. Every time before, every time since, they've lost money. They're spending about $60 billion on Sochi. Winter Olympics, it's only two-thirds the size of the Summer Olympics. They spent about $60 billion in Beijing. They spent about, who knows, $25 billion in London. Now, they had some revenue, so maybe it nets at $23 billion. But LA made money. And some people say, and this is often the take on LA, oh, they made money because those Yankees, they're commercial. They're always commercializing everything, and they made the Olympics less distinguished by that kind of commercial activity, but they made money. Well, in fact, the Olympic Games here were less commercial. From day one, our management team, at that point led by Peter Ueberroth, realized that the television contract that they had been entering, Montreal had television, we didn't add that. Moscow had television. In fact, there was television at the Olympics since Squaw Valley in 1960. But they weren't charging enough. So for US rights alone, we received $225 million. Those rights had been sold in Moscow for $80 million. Maybe 90, I think it was 80. That wasn't an increase in television commercialism, that was just charging what it was worth. And since then, the IOC, who saw money there and has taken over negotiating those rights, has increased it in real dollars every year since. In fact, the rights for 2016 and 2020 Olympics went to NBC for the US alone for $4.1 billion. As to licenses and sponsorships, the people who Coca-Cola says the official soft drink, you know, Anheuser-Busch was the official beer, that sort of commercialism. In Athens, in Montreal, there must have been about 200 of them. People slapping the rings on their product and advertising. Similar number in Moscow, despite being a communist nation at the height of the Cold War. Los Angeles actually reduced the number of sponsors to 32. And then in addition to that, there were licensees who could, say, make a blanket with the five rings, and there were suppliers who could put the five rings on because they were supplying us something. And our total number was fewer than 100. And in both those prior games, it was hundreds and hundreds of such people. And the reason that worked for us is because we realized that if you offer exclusivity in the category, promising you'll be the only soft drink sponsor, you get an enormously higher number. So by having fewer, not more, fewer, you make more money. With that insight, we raised about $120 million in sponsorship money. Montreal had, as I said, a couple hundred sponsors. They raised a total of $6 million in cash. So you didn't have to over-commercialize the games to make it a higher revenue producer. You only had to understand the market. And since then, the IOC has understood the market and has increased those numbers above ours. With those numbers, and then adding that we weren't building except for a velodrome, that's the at Cal State Dominguez Hills, we built an outdoor cycling venue, a swimming pool at USC, and a shooting range at Chino Hills. Except for those three, we built nothing. We renovated the Coliseum a little bit. We dressed up the town. We invented the idea of having a look for the games. Draped things all over town in these pastel colors. No Olympics had done that before. And we had 33,000 volunteers. Well, starting in 1948 at London, there were some volunteers, but nobody had had 33,000 volunteers. Right.
Volunteer. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's great.
And we had commissioners for each sport, private sector people who were responsible for doing it. They'd never done that before. And we had all these existing facilities. So there were no Well, you could say there were no light elephants, but to tell you the truth, those three facilities we built, they're all gone. The swimming pool is still at SC, but they built buildings next to it, so you can't put a grandstand there anymore. So we could never use it again for this kind of event. The velodrome was replaced by that beautiful indoor velodrome right up the road here at what was called Home Depot Center, is now called StubHub Center. Not the most terrific name, but that has a beautiful indoor velodrome. Had the World Championships there about 6 years ago. Incidentally, it's no longer suitable for the Olympics because it has two posts holding up the wall at either end of the course, and they don't want you to have a post between you and the television view of the cyclist. So we're looking at what to do about a velodrome. The shooting thing, it was in a floodplain, and it floods every winter, so it's gone. But despite that, as we look to bid for the 2024 Olympics, we don't have to build any permanent venues. Not like 84, we built three. Zero. This town, when I say town, I mean the entire area, just keeps building sporting things like no other place in the world. And they're worried about white elephants. They should worry. Not only is the bird's nest sitting there unused, but Athens, they've either torn down or totally unused almost everything they built. If you have a town that doesn't have a baseball stadium, in the case of Athens, baseball is no longer on the card, but it will come back. If they don't have it, and then for 2 weeks people play baseball in there, what makes you think there'll be a demand to use it afterward? There isn't. We have a demand that has Staples Center built since 84, without Olympic Games, Galen Center, StubHub Center, the new Belmont Pool, the pyramid over here at Cal State Long Beach, the Pauley Pavilion taken down just to the steel girders and rebuilt. All this happens in this amazing community and the sports world here so that we can put on the games tomorrow with the facilities we have. We have a plan we've discussed with the U.S. Olympic Committee as we've sought to be their nominee for 2024. And that plan has every sport accommodated with existing facilities or some temporary facilities, because in aquatics now they prefer temporary facilities. And yet we don't call out the use of Farmers Field because it might not get built. We don't call out the use of Dodger Stadium. We don't need the use of the sports arena. It's amazing. We would probably use the Walter Pyramid, the Long Beach Convention Center, as we had fencing here in 84. We'll probably renovate and reuse the Long Beach Marine Stadium, where we had rowing in 32. And we can do the Olympic Games now in LA County alone. In 84, we had to have some events in Santa Barbara, rowing, and down in San Diego County and Orange County. We have such a wealth of facilities, we can do it here and we can do it now. Take some time to prepare some things. And we're talking about an exciting new village for them. But in 84, we did it with three permanent facilities, and putting athletes in UCLA and USC residence halls, and having an incredibly successful Olympic Games. And ever since then, and its success, every single year the Olympics come up for bidding, 6, 7, 8, 10 cities from around the world vie to do it. That was our creation. That's a response to us. The opening ceremonies, up until David Wolper got a hold of the 84 opening ceremonies, it was thousands of people in white shorts doing calisthenics. Honestly. Since then, it's become one of the great television shows of the world. And every year they've iterated a little bit. We had 85 pianists playing Gershwin. So the Chinese had 2,008 drummers. But it's the same idea. So if we get 2024, we're going to start from scratch and come up with yet a new idea. It was the first time they had synchronized swimming and rhythmic gymnastics. You may or may not be thrilled by that, but it was the first time. For that first time, we had windsurfing right here in Long Beach, because the sailing would be here again if we did it in 2024. It was a world of firsts. In fact, at the Athletes Village at UCLA and USC, we had the first electronic mail system, an introduction of a new invention by by AT&T email, and the first voicemail introduced by IBM. Believe it or not, IBM did the voicemail and AT&T the email. It seems backwards, but that's what they did. That was coming out of their labs. There were millions of voicemail messages just among the athletes. We didn't have the internet, so you couldn't send an email across outside the villages, but among them, they were introduced there. And it was innovative games, innovative in the way it was financed, innovative in the way it was done, innovative in what actually happened. So it's worth having a book, I think, that tells people the story, and in a way that they can access. And I haven't even mentioned the exploits of Carl Lewis, matching Jesse Owens' record of four gold medals, of Mary Lou Retton, who's on the cover, as is Carl Lewis in the background on the cover. The Soviets boycotted, and that may be one of the reasons the IOC doesn't talk as much about LA, or about Moscow before when we boycotted. And in things like weightlifting, where 94 of the 100 leading athletes were in that Eastern Bloc that didn't come, 14 countries that didn't come, there was a difference in the quality of competition. But in most of the rest of it, it didn't have an impact, except, of course, to increase American medals. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, that increased American enthusiasm in a way that made the games even more memorable. So that was a political event there that's worth talking about. That boycott of us following our boycott of them was so unsuccessful that no one has boycotted since. And anybody who talks about boycotting about the gay issue in Russia, which is from a political point of view, may sound right, but no one takes the bait. So let me answer any questions you've got and stop at that point. And except to say one other thing, there's a timetable for 2024. Around early April, the US Olympic Committee will have a quarterly board meeting, and they will almost surely at that point come and say, we're only considering the following 2, 3, or 4 cities for 2024. We are working very hard and have been working very hard for a couple of years now to be sure that we're among those 2 or 3. We're quite optimistic, but it's somebody else's decision. Then, with those 2, 3, or 4, and I think it'll be 3 maybe, they will put us through certain paces yet to be seen, yet to be specified, and then they will reach a decision in early 2015, A, on whether to bid, and I hope and expect that they will want to bid for 2024, and B, with which city. And we hope that will be LA. And then, in September 2017, 2.5 years later, the International Olympic Committee, with its 110 members, votes on which of the international cities competing. We think it's an American year, we hope, but it's up to them. So,
does the committee visit the